12,000 workers gone from Google. That brings the number fired by big tech companies to more than 200,000 in just over a year. Why are so many jobs being lost in the sector worldwide? And is big tech in big trouble? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. 12,000 Google employees opened an email on Friday telling them that their jobs are gone. The tech giant is the latest to announce big layoffs of staff. It follows others like Meta, the owner of Facebook and WhatsApp, as well as Twitter and Microsoft. Different reasons have been given for such major job cuts. Some blame over-recruitment during the height of the pandemic, others wrong strategies for the future. And then, of course, there's the worsening economic climate. Here's a closer look at what's been happening in the industry. More than 200,000 people, as we said, have been fired in the sector in the past 12 months. Google, the latest to announce cuts, shedding 12,000 jobs. That's around 6% of its workforce. Meta, the owner of Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp, is cutting 11,000 jobs, or 13% of its workforce. And Microsoft is laying off 10,000 employees, many in its video game division. So let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. From Dublin, we're joined by Elaine Burke, science and technology journalist and also host of the For Tech's Sake podcast. From New York, Jim Anderson, who is the chief executive officer of Beacon Software and social media sector lead at Glasswing Ventures. And again from Dublin, Adrian Weckler, technology editor at the Irish Independent newspaper. Good to have all of you on Inside Story. Welcome to the programme. Elaine, let's start with you. Do these job cuts indicate that big tech is in big trouble? And if so, why?
I certainly think that people will definitely feel that way, that this is a signal that all of tech is in trouble. But at the end of the day, these companies are still hiring in some areas. I mean, Amazon also announced about 18,000 jobs lost. And this weekend has announced that it's creating 1,000 jobs in Virginia with the launch of a new data center. So the areas that have growth for them will still see job creation. But it does seem that certain areas they're going to pull back on. In the case of Google, you're looking at a lot of their kind of other bets, their research and development side of things, the things that maybe won't turn a profit until they've had long, long years in development. So they may pull back on a lot of that stuff. And they may also kind of cut back on the support services that they offer in terms of their ad tech, because they have agencies that can support that instead. And there's definitely been talk of that happening already, even ahead of the job cuts announcements.
You talk, Elaine, about them perhaps cutting back in areas that won't turn a profit for some years to come. But isn't that short-sighted of them?
I suppose it's not short-sighted if what their goal is the current market and making sure that improvements are coming here. The timing of both Microsoft and Google's announcements comes just as they're about to report their full year figures for 2022. That's expected in early February. And it seems that they might be anticipating what would be stock market ripples coming from those earnings announcements. And what we see when these jobs cuts announcements are made is that the stock market price tends to go up, and Google itself saw a 5% rise in its share price on the foot of this announcement. So essentially, it seems to be they are thinking kind of in the short term of the stock market price and hedging maybe for an issue that's coming with the earnings call in February, and they're trying to anticipate those impacts.
Jim Addison in New York, we listed some of the reasons why tech companies are cutting back on their workforce, one of them being the pandemic boom not carrying through after the pandemic. Why couldn't the visionaries in the tech industry have foreseen that? Why didn't the boom continue as life returned to normal for many of us?
Well, Adrian, I mean, it's interesting. You know, the phrase that comes to mind to me is what goes up, what must go down, right? And I, you know, the pandemic was remarkable and unprecedented in modern times, and I'm not sure anybody knew exactly what was going to happen afterwards. So in many ways, it feels like what's been changed here is this era of expectations of inevitability that everything is going to continue to go up and to the right for these tech companies. That's clearly not true. They're public companies. They have stock prices. And when the stock prices go down, They face the same kind of pressures that the automakers and the drug manufacturers and everybody else faces. And this is sadly a well-worn playbook. When your stock's under pressure, you cut costs. And now we're seeing it from big tech.
So it's capitalism at work here.
It really is. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, I don't think we should ever be glib about 10,000 or 100,000 people. These are real people losing their jobs. They have paychecks, they have families, they have mortgages. So there is a very significant human cost. The flip side of that, though, is, you know, we're so pleased when we see great job growth, when we see companies hiring. One of the expectations, at least in the United States, it's different, obviously, in different countries, is if I'm going to hire people and you're going to be excited when I do that, I need to actually be able to reduce and let people go when times aren't so good. So that's the downside. And none of us like to see that. But that's the reality. In order for people to be willing to hire when times are good, they also have to be able to let people go when times are not so good.
Adrian, in Dublin, each company is cutting back somewhere between 5 and 10% of its workforce. Is that just coincidence? I wonder what percentage of tech sector workers are actually contractors or freelance. Are these cuts going to affect them too? People who are not on the full-time payroll, they're not full-time employees.
It could well do. So if you take one company that has announced cuts, for example, Google, here in Dublin, they employ 10,000 people, half of which are full-time staff, half of which are contractors. Now, the full-time staff, the employees, could go from, say, 5,000 to maybe 4,700. We don't know what the figure will be for the contractors, or we won't know for a while. They would be big outsourcing firms like Accenture. So there is potentially a second tier effect on the contractors as well. Don't forget, though, that employment in these tech companies went up by about a third in the pandemic. So Amazon, for example, was in Seattle, was hiring 5,000 people every year in addition. So that the cuts we're seeing now are not good. And it may be a canary in the coal mine in terms of a wider recession. But they're bringing the tech industry back to around the levels they were a year ago. And most of them that I talk to, because they're all here in Dublin, for example, most of them that I talk to are still talking about hiring, right, particularly in the second half of the year.
OK, so it's not necessarily going to have a detrimental impact upon the economy there in Dublin, unless, as you say, it's a canary in a coal mine and there's worse to come, not just in the tech sector.
There are narratives clashing here because there was a feeling that there was overheating going on. In most Western cities in the world, for example, there's a housing crisis. A good chunk of that was caused by tech companies that had expanded so, so quickly. Now, we mustn't overlook the fact, I think Jim might have mentioned it and you mentioned it, of a potential recession, particularly in the US, which many of the tech companies which are shedding jobs, that's really the market they're guided by. Also, don't underestimate regulatory effects in markets like Europe. Here we've seen pieces of legislation like the Digital Services Act. Companies like Meta and Google, which are deeply reliant on advertising and personalized advertising, they're taking potentially a big hit there as well. So there are many factors at play.
Elaine, you touched on something a moment ago when you said that the downturn doesn't appear to be affecting all companies equally. Apple, as you say, yet to announce job losses. That doesn't mean to say that there won't be any, but it has yet to announce any. There are other companies too. Does that perhaps signal that other companies were more cautious in the first place when it came to hiring during the pandemic? They didn't gamble on the pandemic boom.
Yeah, and even those who said that they were being cautious still seem to have fallen into this trap. I mean, technically speaking, Google was externally reporting that it was on a hiring freeze for much of 2022, but then it transpires that they hired about 30,000 people, mostly at the top of that year, so maybe the hiring freeze didn't really implement until later. But it does seem to be that even those who were attempting to be cautious and maybe outwardly saying that they were being cautious still fell into a trap that they just kind of believed the boom would continue forever and ever and hoped that it would. Shopify is another example. CEO so Tobias Lütke, they had said in an earnings report that showed massive growth during the pandemic, that they knew that this kind of e-commerce growth was not sustainable. It was pandemic led, and it was because of the crisis situation and people being at home and e-commerce having a boom because of that. And still they then a few months later announced job cuts because they had over anticipated how much that growth would sustain. So even those who were aware of it and reported themselves being aware of it still fell into that trap. We've had companies here in Ireland that are at unicorn growth stage, that are growing and scaling companies, and just recently hitting that $1 billion valuation, like Wayflyer, who are now having to pull back on very recent hiring plans. So there does seem to be that, even though they're very much aware that they shouldn't fall into this trap of over hiring for what is a crisis economy, it still seems to be something that they fall into.
Jim, I want to come back to what you were saying earlier on as well about this being capitalism at work. These companies are still, for the most part, making money. In some cases, they're making a lot of money. OK, sure, I get it, what you were saying. You can't have people on the payroll who are surplus to requirements. But who's driving the cutbacks? Is this the companies themselves, the accountants saying, oh, well, right, we're a bit heavy here, we need to let people go? Or is this shareholders? This is people who are looking to profit out of the success of these tech companies.
Ultimately, it is the shareholders. I think you just nailed it. And of course, the accountants keep track of what we report to the shareholders. And so if you're an executive at one of these companies, it's interesting. There is a contagion that goes on for both good and bad. You know, it's easy to talk about we should be disciplined, we should be cautious, we shouldn't overhire, we shouldn't overeat, to use the phrase somebody used earlier. That's all well said and done, and that sounds good. But then when you're in a bull market and everything's going crazy, you know, your own employees are wondering, why are we not capitalizing on this opportunity? Why are we not growing? Why are we not hiring? And so everybody gets sort of caught up in this idea that we've got to keep up. And then, of course, when inevitably the music stops and things slow down, you've got real shareholders, including activist shareholders, which largely had ignored tech companies. The activist shareholders were not really in and around big tech, but they take a stake in your company. They start nominating new members to your board. They start putting pressure on you. Now you look like a lot of other public companies is, okay, our stock price, as long as it was going up, I could get whatever air cover I needed to do that. Once it starts going down, I've got to respond to the market. So it is very much the shareholders in the stock market ultimately driving this.
All right. So in terms of innovation and the impact that these tech giants have had and continue to have on all our lives, the question, Jim, is should activist shareholders be able to wield so much power? To what extent are they holding back innovation in these companies?
Yeah, that's a great question about, you know, stock markets and the role of, you know, publicly traded companies and, you know, who takes what positions. I think, you know, in general, if you wanted to argue that point purely around technology, and I'll take that element of your question. I mean, these are the most innovative technology companies in the world. And as painful as it is, especially if you're one of the, say, 10,000 people who've lost your job, we're talking about 5%, 10%, 13%, I think was the number you mentioned for Facebook and Meta. So these are not, for the most part, massive cuts. Now, Twitter is a special exception, you know, a company that had other problems and Elon Musk. So let's set that aside. But these are still amazing engines of innovation. And it would be wildly extreme to say, okay, all of a sudden Google and Microsoft and Amazon and Facebook are no longer going to be innovative because they cut 5 or 10 or 13% of their employees. I think that's generally unlikely, unsustainable. And you'll, from the outside looking in, you're not going to see any appreciable difference in the output of those companies in the near term. You know, ultimately, there certainly will be an impact, but it won't be visible to you and I, by and large.
Yeah, like Elaine was saying earlier on, perhaps, you know, it may be a little short-sighted. Let's put that question then to both Adrian and Elaine. In terms of the future, Adrian, and driving the innovation that we've all lived over the last 20 years and will, we're promised, continue to change our lives for the better, not always, but mostly, are job losses on this scale going to hold things back? And what's your view on this shareholder activist point that we were discussing?
Well, two points on that. First of all, you probably remember the big dot-com crash in 1999. And there were a few companies that were on the up at that time and who crashed along with the crash. One of them was a small company called Amazon. And everybody said that Amazon was finished and, you know, it was too ambitious. We know 20 years later, Amazon is arguably the world's dominant retail company because it, exactly as you say, it twigged the change in our behavior and how the economy works. And you may see that in effect now. I mean, Jim makes an excellent point. It's only 10% in most cases of staff that are being let go. Many startup companies that I talk to say that downturns like this, where there's a certain number of people being let go from the big companies, are actually very good for them because they find it very difficult to hire people in normal boom times. Now they might be able to afford to hire a director of engineering and other very valuable staff. So it's very possible that actually you might see this bloodletting, if you want to call it that, you might see new blood and new companies and new ideas and new startups.
That is something I want to home in on in a few moments, Adrian. First, Elaine, I want to ask you a specific question about Meta here and Mark Zuckerberg in particular. Were they wrong to bet so heavily on what Meta calls the metaverse and the rest of us might call virtual reality? What do the job losses at Meta say about his leadership?
They definitely call it into question, but Mark Zuckerberg is particularly powerful at Meta in that he's also the largest shareholder and does hold a lot of sway because of that position. But I think the question is a bit like we were talking about how innovative these companies truly are. I mean, they are labeled as innovative companies and they're very wealthy and powerful, so we see them that way. But a lot of the innovations these days are bought in, and even in the case of the metaverse, that's from Oculus, which was bought by Facebook a number of years ago. And it does seem to have been a bit of a passion project of Zuckerberg's for some time. And now he has this vision that we will all be operating in the metaverse, despite reports from people who do have to live and work in this for the sake of their jobs are not really enjoying it. There's not really a user demand side for this. So you see this kind of problem in Meta where it's a bit of a like lone tech visionary. And if you bet everything on that lone tech visionary having the right vision, well, then you're going to encounter the problems that they're facing now, where they're investing a lot of money into a loss-making division that doesn't seem to have the solid future that the CEO presumes it to have. In the case of Google, you have essentially an advertising business for the large part of its existence. They are now trying to compete in cloud services, where Amazon Web Services absolutely takes the top spot there, and then Microsoft would be even a distant second. So Google is even the third player among the big tech giants in that space. But that is a space where they do seem to see there's opportunity. They are making cuts there, but not in customer-facing roles, not in engineering-type roles. And Google does need to find a new revenue stream, because the ad tech advertising business definitely isn't going to sustain the size of the company that it is. And that seems to be where it's focusing. But then it's talking about pivoting to AI, essentially. And that's where we get where I question the innovativeness of these companies, because they are just following trends. There's a great singularity. We now have Twitter copying TikTok's interface with For You and following, and you see that happen all the time across these companies. They copy and they acquire, and new ideas actually aren't often brought to the fore. I think Apple is actually quite good at bringing new ideas out there, but they're very smart about it. They understand market research and all that kind of stuff. And then in terms of Meta, you have Mark Zuckerberg trying to bring a new idea to the fore that he doesn't seem to understand, doesn't resonate with the everyday person.
Jim, do you want to say anything about Mark Zuckerberg here and his leadership? To what extent do you think he's holding Meta back?
Well, it's interesting. His vision for virtual reality and the metaverse, I think many of us, myself included, question that. It seems very dubious. But it was interesting. Just a few minutes ago, we were talking about companies being short-sighted, right? So, I mean, it's a little bit like you're going to be criticized no matter what you do. And in fairness to Mark Zuckerberg, the four of us can all have our opinions. None of us has founded a company that became worth $500 billion or more. So he probably deserves the benefit of the doubt. But that being said, I'm just like most people, intensely skeptical that that's a world we want to live in. And I think history may prove that that was really a poor judgment. Or it's entirely possible that he is playing the long game, like we talked about. He's trying to be strategic and innovative for the future. And maybe the metaverse will play out in ways that we don't understand and can't predict. And I guess that's the role of a visionary. And, it is true that he controls the company. He has super voting rights as a shareholder. So effectively, he can ignore the outside noise probably in a way that most other companies, including, Google and even Amazon, cannot. So he can certainly insulate himself from the criticism if that's what he chooses to do.
Adrian, I want to pick up on what you were saying there, and also what Jim was saying about visionaries there. Where are the future visionaries? To what extent will nimbler, smaller companies who can innovate faster than the behemoths take a share of their businesses? We all know today about Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Meta, Netflix, and so on. In 10 years' time, even 5 years' time, will other new companies have become household names at the expense of the current crop?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there used to be a narrative a couple of years ago that the FANG companies, the Facebooks and Amazons and Apples and Googles and Netflixes, were too big to disrupt every 2 or 3 years. That is proven to be completely wrong. 5 years ago, very few people had heard of a company called TikTok. Now it is by far the hottest social media company in terms of downloads. And it has its rivals absolutely scrambling. In the last few months, one technology has freaked Google out completely. ChatGPT, artificial intelligence. Microsoft is reportedly investing up to $10 billion in it. The search industry and the search business and how we actually search for things online within the next 18 months might be completely different to what it has been in the last 5 to 10 years. So if you're asking me for a 10-year prediction, I would say that it's almost certain that two or three of the big players who we cannot have imagined ever have living without at that time will be new companies.
Okay. Elaine, big tech companies, of course, are global concerns. Are there regions of the world that will be affected more than others in these job cuts where wages and staff costs are higher, for example? And are we likely to see the centre of gravity shift? All right, they're global concerns, but they're mostly based in Silicon Valley. Do you think that these companies should now be looking over their shoulder at places like China and India, where the competition is likely to emerge and take their crown, if you like, as the behemoths of the tech industry?
Absolutely. And as Adrian pointed out, that had happened with TikTok, where Silicon Valley maybe wasn't paying too much attention to TikTok until it completely exploded in their faces. And they suddenly were playing rival and on the back foot to this massive Chinese tech player. And China has produced some incredible tech companies that absolutely compete at the same level of those Silicon Valley giants. And there's no reason why India couldn't do that with the level of engineering and tech talent that comes out of India. It could be a completely different landscape in the future where we don't speak about Silicon Valley the way that we do now as this innovation center. I think the gloss of that reputation has long been worn away, and it is really losing face in the current context. And I think, as Adrian pointed out as well, this pivot to AI, what you might see is that the people who have been doing the work in AI before now, before this kind of appetite grew in the last couple of months because of the recent releases, they might have a much better understanding of this technology because there's a lot of ethical and bigger considerations that have to come before its implementation.
Yeah.
What I'm afraid we'll see is that the big tech giants will panic and start implementing this stuff willy-nilly without really taking those into consideration. And that could be to the detriment of all of us, including those companies.
And Jim, the final question here, and I've got about a minute in which you can answer this. Will the big companies themselves, Adrian, I think, brought up regulators and you know, anti-competitive practices, will the big companies themselves be able to survive? To what extent are they going to become too big for their own good and the regulators will split them up?
You know, I've long thought antitrust is probably the biggest threat that these companies face, and that's probably still true. Although it is interesting, they can argue and say, hey, look, we just laid off 10,000 people. How big and how dominant and how, you know, how in control can we really be when we're doing this? So I think that actually will ease some of their regulatory concerns. And everybody is and should be concerned about job loss, including regulators, right? And so that's always been their rebuttal is when you try to break us up, well, you may not have these engines of growth anymore. You may lose high-paying jobs, you know, all of those kinds of things. But I do think there are still substantial regulatory issues, antitrust. We should also mention, you raised China, you know, authoritarian governments we know are on the rise around the world. So as successful and as powerful as TikTok is, I don't think ultimately it's a technology choice as much as it is a geopolitical choice. It's entirely likely that TikTok could end up banned in the U.S. And that's political, not technology.
Fascinating. Really enjoyed this discussion. Many thanks to all of you. Elaine Burke, Jim Anderson, and Adrian Weckler. As always, thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the program again at any time by visiting our website. That's at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us on our Facebook page. You'll find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And, of course, The conversation continues on Twitter, our handle at AJ Inside Story. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. We'll see you again.